In order to promote the economic and social development of countries, you have to be clear about what economic and social development even means and how you'll measure these concepts. This is where official statistics excels. Many countries continue to build the capacity of their statistical systems to address the needs of their countries. Our episode today focuses on official statistics and statistical capacity development. I'm John Baylor. Stats and Stories is a production of the American Statistical Association as well as Miami University's Departments of Statistics and Media, Journalism, and Film. I'm joined in the studio by my colleague, Rosemary Pennington, Chair of the Department of Media, Journalism, and Film. Our guest today is Oliver Chinganya, Chairperson of the Board of Directors of the Zambia Statistical Agency and Co-Chair of the Advisory Board for Digital Earth Africa. He was recently appointed a senior advisor at the International Growth Center at the London School of Economics. Formerly, he was chairperson of the Board of Directors of the Zambia Statistical Agency and co-chair of the Advisory Board of Digital Earth Africa. Until January 2025, Chinganya served as director of the African Center for Statistics and chief statistician at the UN Economic Commission for Africa, also known as UNECA. Until October 2025, he was vice president of the International Statistical Institute. His career also includes senior roles at the African Development Bank, the International Monetary Fund, and the Zambia Statistical Office. He is a fellow chartered statistician and chartered scientist of the Royal Statistical Society and is widely recognized for advancing statistical capacity and driving digital innovation across Africa. Well, so to start, how did you start your career working in official statistics?
First of all, let me say thank you very much for having me this afternoon for me and maybe this morning for you, and to be really part of this conversation that we're having this afternoon. Now, how I joined the Central Statistical Office, which is now called Zambia Statistical Agency, was I was a very, very young person at the time. I just left secondary school. And we had at the time what is called the national service, where before when you finish secondary school, your all levels, you have to go through a national service. So I went to a national service, and it required that you do a 6 months military training before you actually get to college. So I was one of those that was enlisted. So I went to the national service. 6 months down the line, the Central Statistical Office were looking for people to hire to the Institute, of Zambia Statistical Agency at the time. I happened to be one of those people that they interviewed. There were five of us that were interviewed, and I was picked. I was succeeded and went through the interview and was allowed to join the Central Statistical Office in June 1979. At the time when I was joining, really, one of the things I thought I was going to do, in fact, which was part of the interview, was that I thought I was going to be an accountant, because they asked me, what do you want to do? I said, well, I would like to be an accountant. But little did I know that I was going to end up being a statistician. So when I finally moved on to Central Statistical Office in Lusaka, I said, look, when I was recruited, I thought, I was told I was going to go to India to train, and become an accountant. They said, oh, no, there'll be time that when maybe that will come, you can be trained. But for now, we want you to join the team that was preparing for the census of 1980, the 1980 census of population and housing. And one of the pieces of work that they needed there was to do the mapping. We didn't have the GIS and all this. We had to do the mapping, which had to be done manually by getting on a bicycle to actually map the country. And so I joined as a mapper at the time when I joined the Central Statistical Office. So they took me to a training center where they were training mappers to map, the country, so to speak, so that we can do actually the census. So I did that training, was 3 months, and eventually taken on. I was supposed to have gone to a province called the Western Province. Unfortunately, I don't speak the language there, the local language there. I speak the local language of other provinces. So they took me to the Cobra Belt province. So I did the mapping, and we're using, odometers and a compass, a real compass for taking directions. And we had to do some kind of, plus and minus, because of the land itself there, at the magnet, the compass itself attracts some kind of magnet. So you had to make some adjustment, plus or minus 3%, 3 degrees rather, to correct. To get the right degrees as we're mapping the place that I was. So we did the work until census time in 1980, which was around June. That's when we're finishing up the mapping, and I participated in the delineation of the of these maps to prepare for the census. When the census was done, they asked the question, when am I going to go back and do my accountants? And at the time, I was also getting more interested in doing statistical work, because part of the things that I was doing there was that there was a lot of calculations, trigonometry, and all these things to get, the mapping and so forth. So I was getting more interested. And I got to learn that there was a program within the Central Statistical Office, which was being organized by the United Nations Development Program Fund, UNDP, I think that's what it was called at the time. And they were running a training school within the Central Statistical Office. So I applied to be at that training school, and I was taken on to do two programs, one which was running for 6 months, and another one that was running for 12 months, depending on whether one succeeds. And somewhat it was affiliated to the Royal Statistical Society, this program as well. So I joined. So I did both the 6 months and the 12 months, that's in a row, 18 months program. I was done with it, and that's how interest became to to me, that I needed to I became a statistician. And eventually I went to the University of Dar es Salaam at the Eastern Africa Statistical Training Center, and after that training I then went to Southampton. I came back. I was a full-fledged statistician in 1991. So I was a full-fledged statistician, and that's how I became really involved much more in statistics. But I must say that I started at a very, very young age. I was about 19 years old. So I went to school when I was actually working. I went to the universities when I was actually working. So in all these places, I was actually went to Dar es Salaam, I went to in Southampton. I was already in employment, and so I started my career really from the grassroots. So having to do the data collection itself, up to the level where I became an analyst after my education.
Oliver, you could have gone a lot of different directions having studied statistics. Why did you decide to stay with official statistics?
I decided to stay official statistics for one. What was clear to me at the time, even when I started this career, first of all, we had only one university in Zambia, which was the University of Zambia. There are several of them now, and they did not have a statistics as a program, so to speak. So we do not even have many statisticians, so to speak. We do not even have a program in demography. So the people that were helping the process at the time were experts from India, from the US, from Europe, and the few from Ghana as well. For some reason, there were a few demographers that came to the country. So it became clear to me that perhaps this being a very new area, it seemed to be a very new area. There were not many statisticians, there were not many people in that area. It became apparent to me that I must become a statistician. I mean, and the options of becoming an accountant were getting less and less, because I was working for an institute, an institution that is only does statistics. So official statistics became an important thing that we needed to produce statistics to inform policymakers, for them to write the right, to make the evidence-based decision making, to really improve the livelihoods of the Zambians in the country. So I would have gone anywhere, but I think I got glued to becoming a statistician. I was getting more and more interested to work in statistics.
You just said that you're interested in evidence-based information to help improve the lives of the people in your country. That sounds like a possible working definition for official statistics. So can you talk about why is official statistics important, just in general, but in particular in the context in which you've worked?
No, official statistics is very, very, very important, in particularly in developing countries, and my country in particular, in the sense that for any kind of development that is required to be made in a country, it cannot be done in the void or in the absence of data, of information. And therefore, that information that is required should be information that is correct, accurate, and really with a lot of evidence around it to be able to inform decisions that are required. And to give an example, we are told that this from the reading is that when Zambia got independence in 1964, there were only about 100 graduates. And none of them was a statistician or no engineers. And most of these were actually perhaps only in education. This is only 1964, which is about 62 years ago. There were only 100 graduates. Having to have data that is correct, accurate to inform decisions becomes very, very critical. So official statistics is important for not just the government, but also even partners and others that use the information to do a lot of decisions that have impact on the individuals. And you need to have that official statistics. It has to have an impact, because if you give them data that is not correct or information that is not correct, the chances are that they will make decisions based on wrong information. I'll give an example. I'm not going to mention the country. I think there was a country that they built a very beautiful school in somewhere in East Africa. They built a very good school, and based on the population that was there at the time, why did they not realize that this was a nomadic population?
Oh.
That after some time, the country, the nomadics left the place, and the school was left on its own with only teachers. But if there was proper information and really good feasibility being done, they would have realized that we are dealing with a pastoral people that move depending on the situation, depending on the climate, depending on the weather. And therefore, it becomes important that you have official statistics that is really good and accurate.
I know that you've been involved, especially when you were working with UNECA, on helping standardize civil registration systems. Could you talk a bit about that work and why it was so important?
Yes. First of all, civil registration and vital statistics, one of the biggest component of it is the accounting or registration of birth records or births of children. This continent is known to have one of the lowest recording of birth registrations, the children being registered when they are born. So it became very important, while running that program, which is still is even now, to sensitize the public in our countries, the mothers in particular, because they are the ones that, all the time spend much more time with the children, to really sensitize, look, you need to register the birth of the children for various reasons. One is that when the government has correct information about births, they can plan over a period of time on how many kids are going to come into school, at what point, when are they going to go in what grade, when do they will have access to school, and so forth. So, and therefore, recording these events becomes important, marriages, divorces, going into employment. So civil registration is very, very critical. And one of the things that I think we were able to do was to work with several other entities, UNICEF and other development, other foundations like Gates Foundation, to see how they can help sensitize the population on issues of birth. And in particular, of course, death are important, but I think birth registration is very, very important. We are still talking about less than 50% of children born on the continent are not registered. In fact, there was a point when they were saying that one in every three were the only ones that had registration across the continent, which was really a very small percentage when you think about it.
Wow, that sounds like quite the challenge to implement. You've seen just unbelievable changes from 1980 through the present. What are some of the biggest improvements that you've noted over the course of your career in official statistics?
There's been quite a number of improvements that have taken place. First of all, and just to limit this conversation to my own country, is that in 1964, the Office of Statistics was based in Zimbabwe, which was southern Rhodesia at the time, meaning that this country did not have even any record at all. So since then, what we saw, the census of 1969, 1980, 1990, 2000, and the most recent one, 2022, I have seen changes within the country and the continent worldwide in terms of countries having to start thinking about roadmaps to improve their statistical systems in the country, what we call the National Strategy for Development of Statistics. So countries now have developed their own roadmaps over between 3 to 5 years on how they want to improve their statistical system in the country. We have seen much more updates in data. A good example was, for instance, in measuring of GDP, national accounts. We have seen now countries really, closing gap in terms of their best years, moving from 30 years now to some like 10 years, and some now even to 5 years. Those are great improvements. We have seen policymakers demanding much more of asking for information, which was not the case before. And so they, you know, really asking for information that would be able to inform whatever they are doing. But at globally and, you know, at continental level, what we have also seen is an integrated systems being developed, where there are regional statistical development programs that are being developed, and even up to the continental level, where at continental level now, there's what is called an African Charter on statistics, which is the resemblance of the UN Fundamental Principles of Official Statistics. We have also seen a change where countries have agreed to what is called the standardized harmonized statistical programs for the continent, what is called the SASHA. So these are changes that we have seen on the continent, but also we've seen now a number of universities in Africa, including Zambia, having programs on statistics, on demography, and now more recently in data science. These are huge changes that are acknowledging the importance of data.
You're listening to Stats and Stories, and we're talking with Oliver Chinganya about statistical capacity building and official statistics. So what are some of the greatest areas of need for capacity development?
Oh, quite a number, but I'm just going to name a few of them. There's a lot of need, still a lot of need in the area of modernizing the statistical systems on the continent. And part of that is that modernization I'm talking about is that the application of tools and technologies that are required. And more recently, we have seen the use of artificial intelligence not yet being applied in a number of our countries. That's one. The second part is that they still need to really improve the infrastructure. And in two forms here, when I talk about infrastructure, infrastructure in terms of allowing data integration, in other words, systems being able to talk to each other, interoperability, it's still a big problem that we need to do to get to the level that's required. But also just having enough equipment, you know, technology here, meaning computers, you know, servers and things like that. We still have countries where they share a laptop or a computer, if you like. So those are big challenges that you want to you know, still deal with. And then finally, really on the capacity building, is the human capital. Yes, people have been trained, but I think there's need to reskill, especially given the changes that we see in the data ecosystem now. That requires a new way of looking at things. We cannot continue to look at the Bayesian theory, for instance, the way it was done 20 years ago. It needs to be looked at differently now because the challenges are different. So these are just some of the challenges. But again, maybe one of the biggest challenges is still the problem of the use of data and how it's disseminated. That too is still a challenge. What platforms and what form should the data be posted or be disseminated? How do we train the users, themselves? And how do we train the general public on the use of data, the media itself on the use of data? There's a lot of misinformation. So there's still a lot of work and there's a lot of challenges that I guess this continent, including other developing continents, countries rather outside the continent, that are facing that still needs to be resolved. And yet what we are seeing, John, is that we are seeing a lot of changes in the manuals. An example, the national accounts, we are now talking about system of national accounts for 2025. And yet we have countries that are still grappling to deal with for 1993. You know, you have manuals that are ordered, but yet the global has moved on. There are much more latest, manuals or guidelines that are available, but countries are still dealing with things that they should have resolved 30 years ago. So these are big challenges that we need to deal with.
You know, you were sort of hinting at this, that the idea of communication is a real challenge. And you know, this, when I think about official statistics, I think about there are multiple audiences for it. Whether it's, you had commented that some in government are now looking for this information more often, you know, sort of as being kind of victims of your own success, there'll be more demand for this. But also there's the public. How do you tell the story of the value of official statistics to the general public?
Yes, yeah, so there's been some improvement in that area because people have realized that, you know, producing books, text and text of information, it's very difficult to pass the information, to disseminate. So there's a bit of movement from there to lean more towards infographics. In other words, pictures. So for the public, you know, if you're talking about a basket, a consumer price index, you have a basket of goods and services. You would show, say, for instance, sugar, a packet of sugar, how much it costs and how it's been changing over time. So you visualize the actual packet of sugar. If it's cooking oil, you know, 750 mils of sugar, you actually show those kinds of things. If it's transport, if it's a truck or a plane, you actually show the plane. So the only way to communicate that information is really distilling it to ways of providing information by visualizing pictures rather than having to give them in textbooks, in 40 pages of text. People will not read. And we've also found that even for the policymakers, if you give them a 40-page document, you say, no, this is the report for the census, they will not read it. But if I give them a pamphlet on the changes of population over a period of time, it's much easier for them to grab. So that's where we are gravitating towards that kind of disseminating official statistics, much more easier. But of course, if your audience is the researchers, universities, it's different. There, you are talking about having to do deeper analysis for them to be able to understand that what message you are passing through. But for the general public, we are gravitating towards really having a much simpler way of disseminating. When we produce GDP, for instance, per capita, they'll tell you we don't eat GDP. So how do you then make GDP per capita be understood? So you sort of distill it in such a way that they actually understand what it actually means. And, you know, this is an average of what every Zambian or every person is supposed to get over a period of a year, and this is what it means. So you need to have pictures around it to measure GDP.
So, post the COVID pandemic, it seems like there has been this sort of rise in mistrust of data and statistics. And I wonder, how has COVID-19 complicated the work of official statistics and the communication of it?
Oh, the post-COVID was quite difficult. In fact, let me say, even during the COVID, I just talked about the consumer price index. The way things are done here in Africa and most African countries is that this traditional way of going to the market to purchase an item and weigh it and measure get to know what the price is. But as you know, during COVID, people were not there, so you could not go to the market. You could not go anywhere, and you could, you know, there was just no way you could do it. So that has been very, very difficult. But of course, I think what COVID did, it brought in some opportunities to start thinking of how else can we collect information. And this is now this new technology came in of, you know, can we use scanner data, for instance, go to the supermarkets and scan data and things like that? Can we use mobile data collection and things like that? So there's been positive things that COVID brought in the statistical, you know, development on the continent. I mean, in the continent and Zambia in particular, many other countries to make those changes. The issue is we had also as what happens to the data that we'd never collected in the years that COVID was running. So again, we had data that we had before COVID and the data that we had after COVID, are trying to, you know, bridge that. That has been a challenge, but I think we've gone past it now. We are, you know, almost 6 years. Excuse me. We are almost 4 or 5 years now after COVID. I think this was sort of stabilized, but it brought a lot of opportunities. That's all I can say, that I think COVID was bad, but brought the opportunity to start doing and looking at things differently.
So there are new tools that emerged as part of COVID, but we've also seen in recent years kind of this distrust of government reports that are coming out. You know, so how do you know how do you wrestle with the challenge of saying we're doing this for you and we're trustworthy in what we do? So how do you fight against that distrust? And maybe not lack of understanding of the value of official statistics.
That's been very, very hard to deal with the issues of trust, and for many reasons. I think one of the reasons is that now statistics, data ecosystems, has people who are not statisticians and they're producing data. And these are people that have tools and capacity to do that. They have the tools and the capacity to do that. And when you ask them, can you give me this information? They just have to give you back a turnaround. In the next 1 hour, they come back, they have data. And yet the official statisticians, they will say, no, we have to go to the field. Can you give us 2 months or 6 months to bring you the data? By the time they come back, they've already given the data to the policymaker and the decision has been made. So that's been a challenge, to verify and to say, look, us from the official statisticians, we are the ones that are responsible to do this, and that what we produce is much more credible because the other ones that are giving information, the methodology, is perhaps questionable because probably they'll use tools that don't even have other information like artificial intelligence and things like that. So one way of dealing with this thing is to begin to work with the private sector, the people that have tools, creating labs within the national statistical system, data labs, others they call them data science campuses, to see how you can blend the use of this new methodology and the traditional ways so that you use them for verification and say, look, what we are giving you now, this is a preliminary information and we shall verify it with this data when it comes in. And that's working very well where there's that understanding. So it has been very, very difficult to, insist that we are the only ones because there are many others that are producing data now. It's a question of creating a mechanism of accommodating them to work with official statisticians. I'm one of those that I'm talking about. Maybe I spoke to you about John this previously. That I'm beginning to think that maybe we should not be talking about official statistics, but maybe talking about public statistics, meaning you embrace the private sector to work with official statisticians, so that if the data that's produced by non-official statisticians, if it's verified, must be accepted as long as they follow the standard. So I'm beginning to think that maybe we need to revisit the UN fundamentals of official statistics so that we can become more inclusive rather than the way we are by insisting on official statistics on its own.
Wow, that's a great thought. That's a so I'm th I think we're gonna have to retitle the whole episode now, Oliver. Well, I'm afraid that's all the time we have for this episode of Stats and Stories. Oliver, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, John. And my pleasure, really. There's so much we can talk about, but I appreciate this. Thank you very much.
Indeed. Stats and Stories is a partnership between the American Statistical Association and Miami University's Departments of Statistics and Media Journalism and Film. You can listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or other places where you find podcasts. If you'd like to share your thoughts on our program, send your email to statsstories@amstat.org or check us out at statsandstories.net. Be sure to listen for future editions of Stats and Stories, where we discuss the statistics behind the stories and the stories behind the statistics.